Okay, our final presenter of today is Aaron Baguette of Baylor University, and his talk is on the board, so take it away, Aaron.
Thanks. In case you know who Gary Gillette is, I'm not him. I'm thankful to him and thankful to Neil and Scott for their help in helping me rearrange the schedule. For some reason, when I booked my departure flight, I thought my presentation was actually today, and it was scheduled originally for late tomorrow afternoon. So anyway, I appreciate all the help in getting being able to talk to you today. So what I want to talk about is the some aspects or characteristics of perceptual cognitive skills related to judgment and decision making. And so the sample that I'll use and sort of talk about are the six umpires from last year's World Series. So because the World Series went seven games, of course, every umpire got to work one game, and Jerry Land, the crew chief, got to work two, game one and game seven. So I'll be using the pitch FX data, which I'm sure all of you are very, you know, probably more well-versed in than I am. But what I want to talk about mostly is the parameters of the strike zone and how we can conceptualize the strike zone, I think, as sort of, or we can actually conceptualize each pitch that an umpire has to make a decision on as a decision. So on average, an umpire has to make 100, 120 decisions a game, a plate umpire does. So I think there's a lot of research, a lot of interesting things that can come from that. And so just looking at sort of the judgment of the strike zone, like I said, I think we can sort of conceptualize the strike zone as a principal parameter of judgment. There's lots of different things that go into judging balls and strikes. I think there's an interaction, an interesting interaction effect that involves perception. So obviously pitches that are, you know, down the heart of the plate, you know, my wife could call that a strike. And she's left-handed, and she would probably call it like this, and you know that would not be correct. But so it's the pitches that are around the perimeter. So there's perception involved. One, you know, we know just, you know, arbitrarily speaking, even that umpires have personal tendencies, or umpires have, you know, specific pitches that they call. One, you know, somebody. You know, one guy might call a low pitch, and one guy might call an outside pitch or whatever. So there's an interesting perceptual interaction there. And there have been some research looking at bias as far as in judgment and decision making, even in umpire judgment and decision making. There have been a few studies that have looked at pitcher reputation on ball strike judgment, which is interesting, but and that's been several years back, so I think it would be interesting to update that. And then this idea of perceived and experienced stress, that comes from the sports psychology literature, and there's a wealth of that information which tells us that the more one's perceived or experienced stress, regardless, the more one's stress goes up, the less the more their performance declines. So there's a negative relationship there. And I think certainly, you know, we could say that any game in the World Series would be a stressful environment, of course, with just, you know, all that rides on each pitch. So briefly, just the parameters of the strike zone. You've all seen this here. Which, am I the only one who thinks this guy resembles Angel Hernandez? MLB umpire Angel Hernandez. I think it's the strong chin, I guess. So just, you know, of course, the rule book states the upper limit, lower limit here. The upper limit is a horizontal line falling just under the uniform letters. So it's a midpoint between the top of the shoulders and the top of the pants. And so the midpoint there is usually going to fall right under the letters of the jersey. And then the lower limit is a horizontal line falling at the hollow beneath the kneecap. So you can see that here. And a caveat is that that's determined as the batter is preparing to swing, or is prepared to swing. So that makes it difficult for a guy who you know, stands, you know, straight up, but then when he's preparing to swing, crouches down. So there's some things that can take place as far as being able to judge that.
So,
Yeah, the official baseball rules is where this information comes from, and it's copyrighted by the Commissioner of Baseball. So that's just the... What's that? What's that?
I thought maybe Bud came up
with that. Yeah, Bud wrote the strike zone rules. Yeah, yep. Yeah. Oh, Bud himself. So the I want to... The sort of the parameters I'm going to be looking at here. You can see the blue line here is what we could define as the rulebook strike zone, and then the red dashed line is what we consider a normalized right-handed batter strike zone, and then the green dashed area here is we can consider the left-handed batter or left-handed hitter strike zone. And these dimensions I've taken from John Walsh, who has written several things in the Hardball Times, and he's consulted with Mike Fast. So these are their parameters I'm using. I think there's still, a lot of potential to explore what the actual parameters of the strike zone are. How, can we standardize a strike zone? So those are some questions I think we can look at. So this idea of judgment and decision making, expert judgment and decision making. So a lot of the there's a lot of research that comes from the sports psychology literature, which looks at judgment, perception, decision making, perceptual cognitive skills, and little to none of that research has involved the population of baseball umpires. There have been a handful of studies that have looked at soccer officials, partly because a lot of the sports psychology research comes from Europe, and so soccer is a more prominent sport. There have been a few studies looking at baseball umpires, but I think my hypothesis is that a lot of the same concepts and a lot of the same findings will transfer and will translate to an expert baseball umpire population. So we can define, Yates and Shearhart here define judgment and decision making as, a judgment is a biased observation. So when we judge something, we're sort of, it's open to evaluation. One umpire might judge a stolen base attempt as the runner being out. Another umpire might judge the same situation, the same runner, and call him safe. So there's some biased observation that takes place when we judge something. And we consider the necessary information. So, of course, in umpiring, they say, balls and strikes, safes and outs. Obviously, those are typically considered judgment calls. I've included balks. Oftentimes a balk is really not necessarily a judgment call. It's pretty, it's sort of either you violate the rule or you don't. But fair foul. We've seen several umpires who have, we've all seen clips of umpires that have missed a fair foul call. The gentleman earlier talked about the reviews. So when umpires call a foul ball, a fair ball, and et cetera. But the balls that are down the line, you would think that an umpire should not miss that call when a ball is bounding down the line. But it happens, and so, I think those are kind of like a balk. I mean, it either is fair or it's foul, but, sometimes that's, open to consideration. So the decision-making process, making a decision is a process of evaluating judgments toward committed actions. So we've judged some information, we've taken in some information, and then we act on that, and that's where the decision-making process comes in. So interestingly, this idea of expertise and expert judgment and decision-making comes from early experience with chess masters. I know nothing about chess, but what this research did is it was actually aiding the group back in 1943, and he would show a chess board with a prearranged game, a prearranged set of pieces to these people who were considered master chess players, and he allowed them to look at the board, look at the arrangement for 5 seconds. And after those 5 seconds, he took it away and then asked each player separately to identify, to recall the chess board arrangement. And then ask them to identify what are the most strategic moves. So list any number of strategic moves, and then from that list what would be the most strategic, and then predict what the opponent would do. So in their study, the expert chess players, or the master chess players, were able to do that much more rapidly than novice chess players. They were able to come up with many more strategies, many different strategies, and then predict what the opponent would do based on that, probably more consistently and more successfully. So that's where this idea of expertise and decision-making comes from. So I mentioned, I think there's a lack of research related to this area, even in fastball sports, which is, you know, what the literature calls it, which would be things like tennis, soccer, softball, and then baseball. So the perceptual cognitive skills we can just define briefly as the complex integration of visual and mental variables used in judgment and decision making. So that's just sort of a general definition of what perceptual cognitive skills are. So I want to, you know, use, of course, the 2011 World Series umpires as a sample. And we can sort of, I think, make a good strong case for Major League umpires, any Major League umpire, as being sort of, you know, an expert. I think even just having a job in Major League Baseball as one of the 68, 70, whatever umpires, I mean, that's, become an expert based on the amount of time you spent in the minor leagues, etc. And then the umpires of those 68 who were selected to work postseason, those we would have to believe, unless it's a good old boy network, which I'm from Texas and we have a lot of good old boy networks, we call them, which is where, you know, if you know somebody, you can get what you want. I don't know if that's how it works, but probably back in the old days it was like that. But we would have to believe that an umpire who's selected for postseason work is an expert among experts, we would presume. So these were the six umpires who worked this year's World Series. Jerry Lane was the crew chief, and he had worked one World Series prior to this year. Greg Gibson, this was his first World Series in 2011. Marquez had worked the 06 World Series. Culpa was his first. Barrett had worked the 07, and then Cederstrom had worked the 05 World Series. So these are, and you can see here briefly, their the divisional series and then the league championship series that they've worked there. So the ball strike decisions made by each umpire, only game six was the only game that went extra innings. So Cederstrom saw more pitches than some, but when we look here at Marquez, which his game, you know, game three only went 9 innings, we see he saw several more pitches. But that was the 16-7, you know, game, so there were many more pitches thrown. So Lane made, these were the, so this is the strike call, and these were the number of strikes called and the number of balls called. So Lane called 37 pitches strikes and 92 pitches balls. Gibson 41, 84, you can see on down the line there. Just the number of balls, pitches that were called strikes, the number of pitches called balls.
Isn't that opposite? There were more balls than strikes?
That's what he said.
Yeah. Yeah, so the first number is the number of strikes that were called. And then the slash, and then so these would be the number of balls, pitches that were called balls. So From the total number of pitches, of the 285 pitches that were in the game, Lane called 37 of those strikes.
Yeah. Balls are called strikes,
though. No. Balls that were put in play are not considered here. These are decisions only. Yeah, called pitches only. Pitches where the umpire had to decide, is it a ball or a strike? Balls put in play, foul balls, you know, things like that. Swing and miss, not in here. These are pitches, non-swings. So, I shouldn't make that. Sorry. Yeah, non-swinging pitches here. So, back to this idea of perceptual cognitive skills. These are sort of the three most important characteristics of these perceptual cognitive skills. One being procedural knowledge, which I'll define briefly in a minute. Advanced cue utilization, and then knowledge of situational probabilities. So when we look at procedural knowledge, this is really probably the most important distinguisher among experts, because what the procedural knowledge does is it allows a person to take any bits of information, small bits of information, and sort of string those together, they say, in order to form an enhanced decision or an enhanced judgment based on that. So we can think of this as sort of selective attention. And they're combining separate task-related items to form an output motor response. The advanced cues, this is sort of an advanced or enhanced pattern recognition. They're able to predict or anticipate different things, anticipate plays which might happen. It involves identifying information, integrating it with what's already there, what they already know, and then responding accordingly. I'm kind of racing through because I want to get to some of the data here. And then situational probabilities, it's just an arrangement of potential outcomes requiring a motor response. So, you know, in certain situations, we can expect a team to sacrifice bunt, or we can expect a team to steal. And so if you're an umpire, you know, here at second base, you're typically going to be in this what they call C position. So A position is at first base, and then B position would be on the first base side of second base, and then C position would be on the third base side of second base. And so you can see, you know, that this umpire might play back a little bit more and then anticipate that. But anyway, so this is a plot of Jerry Lane's. These are all pitches here. All pitches that he called or had to make decisions on. And then I'll break it down so I have three slides for each umpire. Right-handed batter and left-handed batter decision calls here. And then the next two slides I'll have right-handed batter and left-handed batter, so you can sort of break it down there. But, so you can see here that, you know, I've got all three of the different zones here. And then the green sort of dots, those represent pitches that were called strikes, and then the orange dots represent pitches that were called balls. So, like I said, my wife could call these pitches. You know, she could call these pitches here, but it's the pitches that are right here on the perimeter. This is why these guys are paid the money that they are, which really isn't that much considering player salaries. But this is why we have umpires. We don't need an umpire to make this. To determine the nature of that call or that call, but we've got to have them here. And so you can see that Lane, you know, is given a few down here. He's there's a few here that really, you know, should have been called a strike. But, you know, I think this idea of trying to, you know, form a percentage rate on, you know, accuracy and inaccuracy, I mean, it's interesting to look at, but I think there are more interesting things to look at. For example, what's the probability that a pitch within, you know, one standard deviation, you know, to the left here is going to be a ball or a strike or whatever. So these are the right-handed pitches called by right-handed batters. Here you can see pretty consistent here, you know, balls that are down here, and then a few on the outside corner for a right-handed batter. And then the left-handed batter strike zone here, which, you know, for whatever reason, according to Walsh, you know, the zones are different. They're sort of the same. There's the area would be the same, but for a left-handed batter, the umpire typically, according to Walsh, calls pitches out here, strikes more often. I'm not sure if that's because of they'll set up in between the left-handed batter and the plate in what they call the slot, and then, you know, just I don't know if you've seen the pitch on the outside corner to a lefty just looks crisp or looks clean. I'm not sure why they would call that. Looking at some of the others, this is Gibson. I wanted to show you Marquez, something I thought that was pretty interesting. So when we look at this area right here, this is, I think, pretty interesting and shows, I think, evidence of this idea of expert perceptual cognitive skills. So all of these pitches right here, there's what, six or seven pitches right down here on the would be the lower outside corner to a right-handed batter. He's consistently calling that pitch a ball. And that, you know, that's very, very precise, although that would technically, we'd say, well, you know, we should have called some of these a strike because it's within this zone here, but he's consistently calling that pitch a strike. Now, oftentimes, I think an umpire is going to call a pitch that will, he'll call a pitch that will eliminate, you know, the most opposition. So calling this pitch a strike might generate a lot of opposition from the offensive team. So he's consistently balling that pitch, and I think, you know, maybe avoiding some confrontations, I'm not sure. But when we look up in the zone, he's giving this pitch. He's giving that pitch. So oftentimes I think, you know, the dugouts are on the sides, and so the dugouts can see when a pitch is up or down. But they can't necessarily see when a pitch is in or out as well. So from the dugout perspective, of course, he calls these pitches here strikes, but they're over the heart of the plate. Over the outer third of the plate to a right in the batter. So he's not calling that that pitch a strike.
Well, how much of that is framing by the catcher? We hear that so often. It
yeah.
Does not have any impact on the ball or strike. They see what
yeah, yeah, that's a great point. He's asking about catcher framing. So oftentimes when a catcher will set up out here and he never has to move his mitt and just the pitcher pounds it. I mean, oftentimes the pitcher will get that call because the umpire or the catcher never had to move his glove. So that's a great question. And there I think a few people looking at the catcher framing and sort of that interaction effect and how that sort of goes into the decisions that these guys make, which I think is fascinating. So I'd be glad to send anyone, you know, these slides if you wanted to look. I've got, you know, of course, all the umpires here, but I want to, if anyone has any questions, I want to get to the references there. If anyone has any questions, I'd be glad to try and try and answer them. Yeah.
In particular, your list of factors that go into making expert decision making here includes some things which officially probably don't want the umpires taking into account. That is, the umpires are taking into account the game situation. They're probably taking into account the picture and your experience to where they may be taking cues from the catcher and the catcher mitt as to whether or not the pitcher is hitting is too far. Whereas actually what we're really asking them to do in practice is literally no decision at all, but rather just visually make a judgment. In other words, they're really involving decision, just the actual perception and judgment of the ball. Your arm will go out automatically because you judge one way.
Right.
And the other arm spin the ball, and it's chances are it's not going to end up where it looks like it's going to be. So that's an interesting point, you know, as far as some of the different, you know, situational contextual factors. Alan.
So a comment and a question regarding what just said. If you look at Mariano Rivera's strike zone, his strike to left-handed hitters, he gets pitches that are called strikes that are really way off the strike zone. But he gets it because of his reputation.
Yeah.
He consistently hits that spot, and so he's given a strike.
Yeah.
And another pitcher sells the horses and gets
Right.
The question I have is, you're part of the problem in the sense with what you've done here is that you're dealing with low numbers, small. I mean, you really need a lot of numbers before you can start drawing, you know, sharp conclusions.
Right.
If you could take those same six umpires, or Six. Oh, exactly. And look at the whole, since they've already been now pre-identified as being among the best, uh-huh. and look at the whole 2011 season and yeah. see, and then you've got a lot more data and you can start yeah. looking at things in much finer detail.
Yeah, that's a great point. I've been working at Baylor with the program director or the department chair for computer science, and he and I are working on it, and he just actually built a database for us to work with dating back to 2007. So we'll have all that, yeah, and we're just beginning to kind of look at that, and that'll be sort of my dissertation research will involve us. Just
you really showed my theory on the weather with those graphics. That was really fun because you were talking about Mariano Rivera. I would be driven nuts by those Dennis Sackerson. Son of a gun, he started. His first pitch would be right on the outside corner, the next one being further outside, it appears to be, and we still get the call. And then that's what I was thinking. And then also with Ted Williams, you know, he has such a great eye. And one time the catcher was just complaining about, man, Williams was he caught the balls and was going with Williams. And the umpire said, Mr. Williams, he'll let you know
when
this is right.
Sure.
Yeah, I was just going to throw in here the most recent Safer Research Journal before the one we got with our convention materials had an article on fans versus umpires versus a control group calls and such. And I forget who authored it, but the players could call them better than the umpires. And if I'm not mistaken, maybe even the control group can call them better than the umpires.
I'm not sure about the methodology that they use. So,
well, it was a simulation, and we all see the strikes on the picture up there on TV.
So, they were calling pitches based on video.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I just had a question. I was trying to get to your thesis, your own question. You're showing data about the performance of these experts. Is your thesis then that they really do this better than other umpires? Or what was your question you're trying to answer by study besides saying that they're expert at calling false
strikes? Yeah. The question I'm wanting to answer is, can we sort of take this data, this pitch FX data, and use it to display or demonstrate that Major League Baseball umpires are indeed experts at what they do. I'm just getting into that area right now. So I think, of course, we have to assume that these guys are experts. I've just been in contact with Sport Vision, and I'm going to get the data from the College World Series. Those guys are amateur. Well, we would have to say they're amateur umpires. They're getting paid, but not very much. We can look at that and compare and contrast tendencies, that sort of thing.
As we talked about already, you should look at the work that Dan Brooks has done.
Right.
Fairly recent work on this, just so you don't reinvent the wheel.
Right. Yeah. The logistic functions. Yeah. Thank you, guys.